News 18 Daybreak. The perfect way to get you started and informed for the day ahead.
Hello and welcome to News 18's morning podcast, Daybreak. I'm Pathikrit Sen Gupta. While there's understandably a pandemic of coronavirus-related news all around, let's have a listen to some other big stories. A massive manhunt is on in the jungles of Churachandrapur in Manipur near the border with Myanmar to search for militants belonging to two shadowy outfits who have claimed responsibility for a deadly ambush which killed personnel and family members of the paramilitary Assam Rifles. Officials said that the combing operation conducted jointly by Assam Rifles and state police was on in the jungles surrounding the village of Sekhen where the ambush was laid on Saturday. Manipur Chief Minister N. Biren Singh on Sunday said that security along the Myanmar border through which militants are believed to have slipped in and ambushed an Assam Rifles colonel, his wife, son and four other riflemen was being beefed up. The Chief Minister, who laid wreaths on their bodies at Imphal Airport, also said the Home Department and paramilitary forces had been instructed to bring the militants to justice at the earliest. Two militant groups, People's Liberation Army and the Manipur Naga People's Front, had on Saturday jointly claimed responsibility for the attack. Officials said the two groups, one of which had been dormant for several years, while the other is little known of, had chosen their target carefully and were likely trying to make their way back to base camps in Myanmar. Speaking to media persons after the wreath-laying ceremony, Singh said the government will not tolerate such terrorist activities in the state, and added that security along the border areas of the state would be increased. Strongly condemning the horrifying ambush on the Assam Rifles convoy, he said he has instructed the Home Department and paramilitary forces to arrest and punish the perpetrators, according to the rule of law. The mortal remains of Colonel Viplav Tripathi, his family and Assam Rifles personnel who lost their lives in the terror attack in Manipur on Saturday have been flown out to their respective hometowns. Colonel Tripathi, the commanding officer of Koga Battalion of Assam Rifles, his wife Anuja and son Abid, besides four personnel of the country's oldest paramilitary force, were killed on Saturday in a welter of IED blasts and gunfire in Manipur's Churachandrapur district. The four Assam Rifles personnel killed in the attack were Rifleman Shamal Das, Rifleman Suman Swargyari, Rifleman R.P. Meena, and Rifleman Khatne Konyak. Colonel Tripathi was a resident of Rajgarh in Chhattisgarh. Rifleman Das was a resident of Murshidabad in West Bengal, and Rifleman Swargyari belonged to Baksa district in Assam. Rifleman Konyak was from Mon district in Nagaland, while Rifleman Meena was a resident of Dausa district in Rajasthan. In a move that could set off questions in the upcoming parliament session, the central government has decided to extend the tenure of the directors of CBI and ED, a tenure of up to 5 years. The government brought in two ordinances to amend the Delhi Police Special Establishment Act and the CVC Act to make it possible to give the two directors a tenure beyond the current fixed tenure of 2 years. While no immediate response was available from government officials about the need for such amendment, the move could give current ED Director Sanjay Mishra and Director CBI Subodh Jaiswal further extension. Sanjay Mishra's tenure is scheduled to end on November 19 unless he is given further extension. The Supreme Court in September this year had upheld the retrospective extension given to ED Director Sanjay Mishra, but had said that no further extension can be given to him. The court had also opined that extension to superannuating officials should be given in rare circumstances. A senior CBI officer told News 18 that since a committee which includes the Chief Justice of India, the Leader of Opposition and the Prime Minister appoints the CBI Director, an extension beyond 2 years would need the committee's approval. If a year-by-year extension has to be given, the committee will have to approve it. For ED, however, it could be easier since the order will come from the ministry, the officer said. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has hailed the deal struck at the end of the COP26 climate summit in Glasgow as a big step forward and the first ever international agreement to phase down the use of coal. Praising the hard work of COP26 President Alok Sharma, the British Indian Cabinet Minister in charge of navigating the negotiations, Johnson expressed the hope that the two-week-long summit, which went into extra time over the weekend, will mark the beginning of the end of climate change. His statement followed an agreement between nearly 200 countries on a final communique late on Saturday, which recognizes India's intervention for the world to phase down rather than phase out fossil fuels. There is still a huge amount more to do in the coming years, but today's agreement is a big step forward, and critically, we have the first ever international agreement to phase down coal and a roadmap to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, said Johnson. I hope that we will look back on COP26 in Glasgow as the beginning of the end of climate change, and I will continue to work tirelessly towards that goal, he said. According to the impact analysis of the agreement, the central summit goal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius has been kept in reach, provided countries continue to take ambitious action over the next decade. Over the last 2 weeks, tens of thousands of people from 197 countries came together in Scotland for the talks, which culminated in the Glasgow Climate Pact. It commits countries to phase down unabated use of coal, supports a just transition for developing countries, and action to tackle loss and damage, and agrees a common time frame and methodology for national commitments on emissions reductions. India, represented by Minister for Environment, Forest and Climate Change, Bhupendra Yadav, made a crucial intervention to insist on fairness and balance in the final communique. Developing countries have a right to their fair share of the global carbon budget and are entitled to the responsible use of fossil fuels within this scope. In such a situation, how can anyone expect that developing countries can make promises about phasing out coal and fossil fuel subsidies when developing countries have still to deal with their development agendas and poverty eradication? Questioned Yadav. China also had similar views on the subject of fossil fuels, impacting the final wording of the pact to reflect efforts to phase down the use of unabated coal and phase out inefficient fossil fuel subsidies, while providing targeted support to the poorest and the most vulnerable, in line with national circumstances. On the issue of coal, for the very first time in any of these conferences, the word coal is actually reflected in the text. That is a first. Yes, of course, I would have liked to ensure that we maintained the phase out, rather than changing the wording to phase down. But on the way to phasing out, you have got to phase down, Alok Sharma told Sky News on Sunday. Ultimately, we need to ensure that we continue to work on this deal and commitments. And on the issue of coal, China and India are going to have to justify to some of the most climate-vulnerable countries what happened. You heard the disappointment on the floor, he said, insisting it overall marked a historic agreement worth being proud of. Countries are now asked to return next year with a more ambitious 2030 emissions reductions target, or so-called nationally determined contributions, in line with the 1.5 degrees Celsius target. This will be combined with a yearly political roundtable to consider a global progress report and a leaders' summit in 2023. Australia scripted history on Sunday to become the new T20 World Cup champions after registering a comprehensive 8-wicket win over New Zealand in the summit clash at Dubai International Cricket Stadium. Australia lifted the T20 World Cup trophy for the first time since the tournament's inception in 2007. Chasing a formidable target of 173 in the high-octane finale, Mitchell Marsh and David Warner laid the foundation of the historic win with magnificent half-centuries, which took away the game from New Zealand's reach. The Aussies chased down the target with 7 balls to spare to stamp their authority over neighbours New Zealand. It was the biggest run chase in the T20 World Cup final history, and Australia didn't find much difficulty doing it. Marsh remained unbeaten on 77 as his astonishing knock was laced with 4 sixes and 6 fours, while Warner was dismissed on 53 runs as he smashed 3 sixes and 4 fours to continue his golden form in the tournament. Marsh and Warner didn't allow any New Zealand bowlers to settle on the Dubai track as they took charge over almost everyone from the Kiwi attack. However, Trent Bolt castled Warner, which pulled him back to become the leading run scorer of the 2021 T20 World Cup. He finished the tournament with 289 runs in 7 matches, while Pakistan's Babar Azam topped the list with 303 runs in 6 games. With the win, Australia once again stamped their authority over their neighbours in the much-talked-about Trans-Tasman rivalry. Meanwhile, Marsh also scripted history in the summit clash as he hit the fastest 50 in the men's T20 World Cup finals history. Marsh completed his 50 in just 31 balls, as he surpassed Kane Williamson, who also achieved the feat in the same clash by hitting it on 32 balls in the first innings. The Marsh-Warner duo shared a crucial 92-run stand for the second wicket to put Australia ahead in the chase after skipper Aaron Finch's early departure on just 5. Marsh took Australia to the win line alongside Glenn Maxwell, who also made a valuable contribution with his 28-run not-out knock. Maxwell, with his outrageous switch hit, wrote an important chapter in Australian cricketing history. Earlier, New Zealand skipper Kane Williamson came up big in the final with a crucial 85-run knock to power New Zealand to a challenging total of 172 for 4. Williamson finished with 10 fours and 3 sixes in his 48-ball blitz to lift New Zealand from 57 for 1 in 10 overs after being invited to bat first. New Zealand bowlers, who were right on the money in most parts of the tournament, failed to emulate the same in the big-ticket finale. It was the first time when New Zealand was playing the T20 World Cup final. Right, everyone, that's all for today, but we will be back again tomorrow with a fresh dose of news for you. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter Daybreak at news18.com and do follow the website for more news and developments. Thank you for listening, stay safe and have a very good day.
News 18 Daybreak, the perfect way to get you started and informed for the day ahead.